Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. It's Election Day in California. Voters have just under 11 hours to be counted in the recall against Governor Gavin Newsom. As of this morning, about 39% of ballots have been returned so far, according to Political Data Incorporated. We'll have more information later in the hour on how you can still get your vote in and even register for a provisional ballot and what that actually means. But first, we're going to hear from CAP Radio reporters who are out at polling places in Sacramento and Yolo counties. First up is CAP Radio race and equity reporter Sarah Mises-Tan. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Vicky. It's good to be here.
Where exactly are you?
I'm in North Sacramento right now. I'm at the Greater Sacramento Urban League, which is the voting center for Del Paso Heights.
Well, jumping right in, you've had a busy morning. You've been reporting since 6 a.m. What have you seen and learned so far?
It's been really interesting, actually. I started my day in Oak Park at the Oak Park Community Center and have really seen the spectrum of voters come out, especially in Oak Park. There were a lot of people who were turning out to vote in person, which was really interesting. I know the poll inspector there said that when they opened the center at 7 a.m., there was a line out the door of about five people, all of whom who said they were there to vote in person at the ballot box. So I definitely think that people were turning out in force this morning. It's been a bit of a different story here in North Sacramento, a little bit quieter. The poll inspector here said that they had not seen that many folks coming in to vote in person or drop off ballots, but that they had been seeing about a steady trickle throughout the week. So it's been interesting to kind of see the different spectrum of where people are landing today and how they feel they should be casting their vote.
Yeah, definitely. Even the spectrum just within, you know, the city of Sacramento. You actually spoke with some voters today. One of them was Jesus Mata. And did he tell you he just found his ballot this morning?
Yes, he did. He showed up and he was just dropping his mail-in ballot in the ballot box out front. But he said that he actually was not planning to vote, but he was speaking with a friend last night who was very passionate and basically who made him change his mind about casting a vote. He said he found his ballot this morning and stopped by to drop it off. Here he is.
It is concerning that, you know, people may not turn out too much for this election. For me, I just thought back to when I was voting in 2016 and how horrible it was to wake up the next day, like with the results that we had, and just the four ensuing years that were like traumatic even before COVID. That was my main motivator to come and vote, not to recall Newsom today.
I think that just really hits home that not only are there undecided voters still, but there's actually just registered voters or eligible voters that are still even unsure if they're going to turn up and actually return their ballot.
Absolutely, yes. And I definitely think that you see that impact happening here in North Sacramento where, you know, the poll inspector said that the number of people that they've seen turning out to vote in this recall election is much, much less than what they saw for the presidential election last year. So, you know, it's something that is absolutely worrisome. And it's something that I actually spoke with a number of advocates about, particularly when it comes to voting in the Latino community, which is such a huge voting block for California.
Well, leading up to today's election day, you actually did some reporting on how Latinos in Woodland were impacted by the pandemic and how that ultimately shaped their thoughts on the recall. What did you learn from those conversations?
Oh, yeah. You know, I learned, obviously, it's important to say that the Latino vote is not a monolith.
Right.
And there are so many different, you know, so many different political leanings for the large and diverse Latino community that exists in Sacramento and in the Sacramento area and in Woodland. We focused on Woodland just because that's a community that is about 50% where 50% of the residents identify as Hispanic or Latino on the census. And so it's a community that has a very high number of Latino business owners, many of whom were really impacted by the closures that Gavin Newsom put down last year. And, you know, I spoke with a number of business owners in that community, and it was interesting to see the spectrum of where people fall.
Yeah, and we have a couple sound bites that really just captures that it is indeed not a monolith. I mean, you spoke with Sandy Vasquez, who works at Barajas Deli, but also runs a check cashing business in Woodland. And she told you that because of the shutdown, she was essentially out of a job with her check cashing business because no one was working. What did she have to say about the governor and how the past 18 months has impacted her?
Yeah, you know, she said that she is actually typically a Democratic voter and has been in the past, but that just this past year and the handling of the pandemic and the impact that it had on her and friends that she knew and family really shifted the way she saw Governor Gavin Newsom. Here she is.
I just think he did everything wrong. He should have came down as with the community and helped us out a little more, but he didn't.
You know, and on the flip side, you also spoke with Alan Contreras, who's a butcher at El Torito Meat Market. What did he think about Governor Newsom?
Yeah, Contreras is a really interesting case also, just because he mentioned that, you know, he was not out of a job. His business was deemed essential. But he and his entire family did get COVID. And he said that he did see the virus up close and personal, and it did impact him. And he felt that Governor Gavin Newsom was making decisions in the best interest of Californians and the Latino community in California. Here he is.
I honestly think he's doing a great job. A lot of people are against him because of gun laws, you know, the whole business is closing, the whole mask. But honestly, I just think he's doing a great job.
I think this is just foreshadowing of the rest of the day for you, Sarah, when you're talking to voters and just the spectrum of views and how everyone has been individually impacted by the pandemic.
Absolutely. Yeah. If there's one thing that I can say, there is no one opinion that I am hearing loud and clear. It seems that it is really 50-50 divided Democratic, Republican voter, you know, no matter what people have voted in the past, it seems that the pandemic has absolutely really had people rethinking and thinking again about who governs California.
Sarah, thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thank you so much.
And that is CAP Radio race and equity reporter Sarah Mises-Tan. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're devoting the hour on Insight diving into the gubernatorial recall election. We're now going to bring in CAP Radio and PolitiFact California reporter Chris Nichols. Chris joins us in downtown Woodland talking with voters at the Yolo County Administration Building. Good morning, Chris.
Hey, good morning, Vicki. It's good to be here.
You know, we just heard from Sarah in Sacramento. What are voters in Woodland and Yolo County telling you?
Well, I think we're hearing a similar story. I mean, you have voters who certainly support the governor. I spoke with a man. His name is Stephen Jewell Patterson. He's 63. He said, you know, he thinks that Governor Newsom is handling the pandemic the right way. He thinks that there should be strict enforcement given the health concerns and the health crisis presented by COVID-19. But I also spoke with others who voted yes and said, you know, things like the governor not pushing to keep schools open and in person last year really bothered them. Justin Smith, 39, he's a Republican. He lives here in Woodland, works in manufacturing. He spoke with me about some of his concerns.
I'm not for the state mask mandate in the classroom. I was in education for 14 years. My wife's a teacher. She's in the classroom. She's not worried about children getting it to her. She's been vaccinated. I've been vaccinated. Any adult can. So I think it's another Newsom, you know, just going along with the teachers' unions.
When talking with voters in Yolo County in Woodland, is there anything that stands out to you? And I guess actually, you know, Sarah was saying it from one polling place to the other, there could be a line of voters at 7 a.m. and others were kind of trickling in the days leading up to Election Day. How is turnout where you're at?
Well, early on, it was really just a trickle at 7 in the morning. You really didn't have, you had more election staff than actual voters. But after about an hour or so, you started to see a more steady stream. I'm watching people go in. I watched a mom with her young child. They walked in together just a moment ago. I'm seeing cars pull up and people walking over. I'm also seeing a few folks go across the street and drop their ballots in the mailbox, which obviously people can do today, as long as it's postmarked today on Election Day. So it's sort of a steady stream now, but I have not seen any big lines. It's not been a big, massive crush of people.
Well, after everyone has voted, the question I think most on people's minds will be how fast will results come in? So, Chris, what can you tell us about that?
That's right. I think that's what everybody's going to be waiting for, especially later today. We should get some partial results shortly after the polls close at about 8 o'clock tonight. And those initial results will come from the millions and millions of vote by mail ballots that have already been sent in and tabulated before Election Day. We had nearly 8 million of those sent in as of yesterday morning.
And when will we see the results from today's in-person voting?
We should see those a little bit later on tonight and into Wednesday morning. That will be as counties start to release those results every hour or two after 8 o'clock. And then after that, there'll be a third and final wave of results. And that will come from voters who mailed their ballots over the weekend or yesterday or today. Those are going to take a couple of days to arrive at the county offices. And those ballots must be counted as long as they are postmarked by today. And one tip on that, if you are dropping off your ballot at a mailbox today, make sure that there's a pickup time scheduled for today so that your ballot will count.
Yeah, I mean, oh, that's great advice. Well, Chris, also in the days leading up to the election, I mean, there have been these claims made by some prominent Republicans about voter fraud in California's election process. You're obviously a reporter also for PolitiFact California. What did you find out and what did you learn about that?
We have been hearing those claims. They've really been popping up a lot lately. Former President Donald Trump yesterday and a top polling GOP candidate, Larry Elder, they've both made these claims saying that California will have a rigged recall election, just as former President Trump falsely claimed about last year's election. PolitiFact spoke with election officials about this, including Donna Johnston. She is the Sutter County Registrar of Voters and president of the California Association of Clerks and Election Officials. They've told us they've seen no evidence to support these claims. And for some context, the officials we spoke with, they pointed out that elections are run by local jurisdictions. They are decentralized here in California and across the country. And rigging an election would require convincing election officials across the state, Democrats, Republicans, independents, officials to essentially work together secretly to break the law and risk landing in jail. They said that is simply not happening.
Well, thank you for clearing that up for us. Before we let you go, you also spoke with Kim Alexander, who is with the California Voter Foundation, and we're going to listen to some last-minute tips that she had for eligible voters.
Every Californian who's eligible to vote in this election can vote, even if they're not registered at their current address. They can go to a voting site in their county and conditionally register and vote on Election Day. You know, everybody was issued a ballot, but not everybody maybe held on to that ballot. They might have accidentally recycled it or thrown it out. That also doesn't mean you have to skip this election. You can still go to an in-person voting site. They will issue you a provisional ballot, and you will be able to cast that and have it counted.
Chris, can you explain why a provisional ballot is important in all of this?
Well, those ballots are important because they're really the fail-safe that California has put into the election system. If, like Kim Alexander said, if you've lost your ballot, if you haven't registered, you can go to these voting sites. You can essentially provisionally or conditionally register, meaning you get your ballot, you vote, and then they verify your identity and your information before that vote counts. So it allows you to go ahead and participate in the process. That's been a really important value for lawmakers in California through the years. But on the back end, there is a verification process that happens before that vote actually counts. So it does take a little bit longer for that ballot to count.
The reason why you vote provisionally in that kind of situation is because the elections office has to make sure that vote by mail ballot doesn't turn up. And you could you could go to a voting site and claim that you hadn't voted, but actually dropped your ballot in the mail and be attempting to vote twice, which is illegal and gets prosecuted in California. The way election officials protect against that is they hold those provisional ballots till the very end and make sure that you did not, in fact, also submit a vote by mail ballot or vote in person at some other site.
Finally, Chris, if someone's listening to this and this applies to them and they want to go and they want to vote, but maybe they don't have their ballot, what information do they need to bring with them?
Well, if it's your first time registering to vote, you will need to bring some form of identification. It doesn't have to be a photo ID. It can be a utility bill, something with your name and address on it. And you're, of course, given that we're still in the middle of a pandemic, I mean, election officials are handing out masks. They are asking people to bring those, wear a face covering when they come inside the election offices. And if you show up at the end of the day and there's a line, bring your patients. I think that's the other part. Obviously, election officials are working hard to make sure everything goes smoothly. And one last tip, if you are in line by 8 o'clock, but you haven't had a chance to drop off your vote, your ballot, stay there in line. You are legally allowed to go ahead and vote, even if the line is stretching around the building.
Thanks for spending time with us, Chris.
Thank you very much, Vicki.
And that is Cap Radio and PolitiFact California reporter Chris Nichols. Up next, we discuss voter participation, California's changing electorate, and when exactly we'll learn the recall's outcome. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. Although today is Election Day, we've been getting a glimpse of voter turnout for weeks now. Mail-in ballots are being returned across the state, and the leading data firm, Political Data, Inc., has been closely following the returns with continuous updates of who is voting. Paul Mitchell is the co-founder of Political Data, Inc., and has been joining us on Insight in recent weeks with more on what we know about the mail-in ballot returns and the unknowns as people vote in person today. Paul, always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Well, given how meticulously you've been following all of this, what's the big headline for you this morning?
Well, the big headline is a big question mark. What we're really looking for is, will Republican voters rebound? Their turnout to date in the early returns really wasn't as strong as expected, given the fact that there was so much talk about this enthusiasm gap, that they were really, really excited about this election and wanting to recall the governor, and the Democrats were kind of, you know, not as enthusiastic, not as excited. Now, Election Day is really the last opportunity for these voters to come out in droves, and we're really looking to see what happens with those poll voting voters that polls show actually support the recall at 70%. It's the highest pro-recall vote is among people who said that they were going to vote at the polls. So we really are looking to see what happens today.
Back in 2003, for the recall of then-Governor Gray Davis, and I know a lot has changed since then in nearly 20 mm-hmm. years, but the voter turnout back then was 61% of registered voters. How do ballot returns now compare to 2003?
Well, right now we're at 40% roughly turnout. So I don't think turnout is going to be at that 61% total. But remember, in 2003, there was not as large a share of the total electorate registered. We have 22 million registered voters now in California. We're talking about, you know, the huge numbers of people who've returned their ballots already. And in 2003, there was only 3.2 million ballots even mailed out to voters. Vote by mail was not as popular or as widely used as it is now. We have nearly 9 million ballots returned as of this morning. So a very, very different election. And then, of course, the star power from Schwarzenegger on that ballot was a driving factor, I think, in a lot of turnout. And we had a governor at that time, Governor Gray Davis, who had a popularity rating that was significantly lower than Gavin Newsom. So the environment that Gray Davis was running and was, I think, a lot more challenging for him than it has been for Newsom.
Has there been anything that has surprised you in recent days leading up to Election Day?
Well, one thing that did surprise me is that for many, many elections, as we've seen this transition to more vote by mail, patterns developed. And one of the most reliable patterns was that Republicans were the early voters. The early voters were older, suburban, more white. And then later voters would be more renters and Latinos and Democrats. And there was this kind of time function in our elections that was very reliable. And it was borne out by these habits that voters developed over several elections as to how they were going to vote each time. In 2020, we saw all that flip, and we saw messaging of distrust of vote by mail, voter fraud claims, and that pushed Republicans to want to vote at the polls, and it pushed Democrats, honestly, to want to vote super early to prove that they cared about, that they trusted the vote by mail system and, you know, their own kind of messaging. Now, I think seeing that pattern from 2020 repeat itself with Democrats voting super early, Republicans voting super late has been surprising. And then I think it's been disappointing to see in the last couple days a real embrace of these voter fraud claims by the recall proponents. It seems as though, it almost is like voter suppression. You can't, I think, effectively drive people to the polls by telling them that their vote isn't going to count. And I think that's really disconcerting. And it could be kind of the thing that stops this recall from being successful is a lot of the messaging to their own base voters that the system is rigged.
Well, with that said, when do you think we will likely know the final outcome?
Well, I think we will probably know it tonight. And what we'll actually look for is in the first data that comes out from the counties, it's called the 801s because the polls close at 8 and technically at 8:01, the county registrars can start reporting who's voted and what their what the results were. Now, we would expect in that first hour from 8 to 9 to see about 9 million returns in total. And from those 9 million returns, we know that 9 million returns reflects a population where it was basically 2-1 Democrat over Republican. If the polls are right, that would suggest that those early returns, we should see the no side with about a 20% or a 20 point lead on the yes side on the recall. If that's the case, then I think most people will be able to say, well, the polling was right. And, have an early night, be able to basically be done, maybe by midnight. If we get those first returns and we know it's a 2-1 Democratic voter universe, yet the recall is maybe only behind by a few points, it's close, then we have to think to ourselves, my God, that polling was really wrong. We're going to be in for a long night. We're going to be in for a long couple weeks or month. So I think that when we get that sense of the actual numbers from those first early returns, we'll have a really good idea as to where this thing's headed.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're diving into the recall election, checking in on the latest ballot returns with Paul Mitchell with Political Data, Inc. Let's now bring in Mindy Romero. Mindy is the founder of USC's Center for Inclusive Democracy, which focuses on voting behavior and participation. Mindy, welcome back to Insight.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
What's standing out to you about Election Day and the in-person turnout?
Sure. I think thus far, it's just the sheer numbers that we have been seeing in terms of vote by mail. Early in-person is always slower than on election day, but we're still seeing numbers, I think, that many of us did not expect to see in this type of election, essentially a special election, only one item on the ballot. As of, a month or two ago, still a lot of voters not paying attention to it. We're looking at some, in the end, potentially some pretty high for this type of election, pretty high registered turnout numbers that I think are exciting just for the democratic process. We'll have to note, though, that I think ultimately it's, still not going to be as high as it maybe should be considering the what's at stake on the ballot, not as high as a presidential general election, for instance. And we'll have to see how representative that that pool of voters actually is. We know it won't exactly look like, you know, the population as a whole in terms of race, ethnicity, age. But overall, I think just the numbers that I'm seeing are exciting for this type of race, considering what the expectations were going in.
You know, you researched the 2020 election and released that study just a few weeks ago, and you found that vote by mail is overwhelmingly used in California. But your research also looked into who is voting in person. Who are these people?
Yeah, well, you know, in November, during that voting period, 87% of all votes cast were vote by mail ballot. But that doesn't mean they were all mailed in. Actually, about a third of all votes cast were actually mailed in. Another almost 40% of ballots were dropped off at a drop box. About just under 13% of all ballots cast were in person, to a traditional polling place or vote center, not using a vote by mail ballot. And voters of color, Latinos, I should say more specifically, young voters, new voters, had higher rates of in-person voting than other groups. And the big question was going into this recall election, as I think Paul already alluded to, were we going to see as such high numbers? We always have high numbers of vote by mail in California, but were we going to see such high numbers? Were we going to see some of the patterns that we saw last November emerge for this recall? For instance, like the Democratic and Republican switch in the use of vote by mail and in person. At least in terms of the high vote by mail numbers thus far, we're seeing that, but we won't really know until obviously the end of the day to see exactly what those patterns look like. But at least going into this, we saw a major change in November in how people were voting, people wanting to use drop boxes, you know, because of COVID and other reasons, and it not being the same across groups. And to keep that in mind as we examine this election, you know, people have different needs and preferences. People need to use in-person voting for lots of different reasons. And I expect, no matter exactly what the numbers end up being, we're still going to see patterns of difference across groups reflected in those different needs for this recall.
Given that there's a growing number of Californians that are opting for vote by mail, what are the inherent challenges that we're learning about vote by mail?
Well, I think for many voters, it's just an education process, right? If you have used it infrequently or you haven't used vote by mail before, it's just getting educated. And you already have some great tips from Kim Alexander earlier, that you make sure that you get your ballot in, right? That it's postmarked on election day. You have 7 days after for it to be received. You want to make sure your ballot isn't rejected for any reason. In November, we did have a little over 80,000 ballots. It was only about 0.5% of all ballots cast that were rejected, vote by mail ballots that were cast, but still 80,000 is a lot of individual voters that got their ballots rejected. And there's always a small number of voters in every election that get their ballot rejected. Make sure that you sign it, and you sign it the way that matches your signature on your vote on your registration at your local election office. Make sure that you get it in on time and that it's postmarked appropriately. And of course, that you actually do sign it. A lot of people get their ballot rejected because they have forgotten to sign their ballot envelope. So just being educated about all of that. And of course, the larger, which you've already alluded to, the larger set of misinformation that's out there around vote by mail. We know it's safe, it's secure, it's very popular in this state. We did not have voter fraud issues in our state around vote by mail, voters should feel very comfortable in using it. But it's up to them whether they want to mail it in, drop it off at a location.
I'm just thinking of my dad. He just voted by mail for the first time, and you know, I still had to kind of help him along with that, especially reminding him to sign the outside of the envelope. So I can definitely understand that.
I should say, by the way, the rejection rates also vary by group. So Latinos, for instance, are more likely in this last election and previous elections to get their ballot rejected. Young people are more likely to get their ballot rejected. So if you're working with groups doing, you know, outreach messaging in the last moments of this election, or you're just talking to family members and friends, keep that in mind that people have different reasons for not getting their ballot accepted and kind of hitting all those marks in terms of helping your fellow potential voter.
Yeah, I'm still stuck on a soundbite that Sarah Mises Tan had earlier on in our show, and I want to ask you and Paul this. I mean, this was a voter who wasn't planning to vote, but kind of decided last minute to show up and to vote. What does that signal? Because it's not a lone person. I mean that's an example of maybe the unknowns as we face today. for Election Day. Mindy, what do you think about that?
You know, I think, again, I think for voters, particularly this kind of election, some voters didn't even maybe hear about the election until today, right? Or they weren't aware of it, they weren't comfortable around it. A lot of messaging has gone out by your station, you know, very much so in terms of telling people what the ballot means and, you know, what a yes means, what a no means, if there's two questions. But I think people have to feel first, they have to know about the election, but they have to feel comfortable what their vote means. They have to feel that there are stakes, that it matters for them to pay attention and participate, and ultimately that their own individual vote matters. And some people don't make that decision until the end. Some people don't. It's about getting at the last minute, you know, outreach to and mobilized by groups, by friends, by family. And maybe the larger question is, you know, for a lot of voters, it is a question whether they're going to participate, even when they know about the election and feel comfortable. They don't know if they want to participate in a system, right? That they, if they have questions about whether they believe in it or trust in it. And in this, particularly in this environment around misinformation, which again, we've touched on, I think for a lot of voters and probably more Republican than Democrat right now, currently in the environment, are wondering whether their vote's going to be manipulated, right? Whether they can trust that process, whether they should even bother. And you know, all of that, of course, is really unfortunate for and you know, for our democratic process. And I think one of the fallouts from this election, you know, we were dealing with this as a nation, a state and a nation after November, and then California, you know, just timing happened to almost immediately go right into a special election, this recall that was hyper partisan, and has just increased the amount of misinformation and distrust around the security of the election. And I think we're gonna have consequences going forward in terms of voters, how they feel and how they trust the election process. But hopefully we can counter that, right? Like today.
Yeah, Paul, I mean, given for that individual who decided to vote today, I mean, it really just took a conversation with a friend last night to kind of push them over and to show up and to actually vote on Election Day.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. A lot of people think that, you know, voter turnout and targeting in these campaigns, that everything's down to a science, like we know exactly who's going to vote and when they're going to vote. And there is a lot of data out there that we have. We can look at people's prior vote history, and that's generally a really strong indicator of their likelihood of voting. We can even look at whether they previously voted early or voted late or voted at a ballot drop box and other things to kind of get at the patterns that we see in individual voters and kind of targeting and trying to figure out who's likely to vote. But then sometimes, you know, everybody has some probability, and maybe they wake up that morning, they're walking to class, they see the ballot drop off box, they think, oh man, I don't have my ballot, maybe I'll just go in there and get a ballot and vote or register and vote. So that stuff does happen. You know, I don't think it necessarily defines a lot of the campaigns. Unfortunately, like Mindy was saying, there's a segment of the electorate that's always high turnout that isn't really representative of the total state, that is more defining of the you know, the total electorate that comes out and influences these elections. The challenge, and Mindy's done a lot of work on this, is that as you get to lower turnout elections, those elections start to look less and less like California. And so working like Mindy has done to try to figure out how to message those voters to make sure that more of these individuals have the opportunity to vote. That person who decided today that they wanted to vote in another state, or maybe even 10 years ago in California, they might not even had the opportunity to make that decision at the last minute, go in and vote. So there's a lot of potentially lessons to be learned from observing those kind of pieces of behavior, you know, even these little anecdotes.
You know, Paul, what also stood out to me from Sarah's reporting was that, you know, one polling place in Oak Park, you know, there was a line down the street at, you know, 7 a.m. And then when we were talking to her, she was in North Sacramento where people were trickling in. And even Chris was talking to us in Woodland in Yolo County, which isn't too far away from Sacramento, about at one point there being more poll workers than actual voters walking in. I guess, is that Election Day kind of hustle and bustle becoming a thing of the past, given now that there is, now that people can actually vote by mail and mail in their ballots days and weeks leading up to the election?
Yeah, it's, you know, when I first came into elections, it was this romantic idea from like the movie The Candidate, where The Candidate was a movie about a California race for U.S. Senate. And it had this whole arc of, you know, the candidate gets into the race, they get their campaign team, they do fundraising, they do debates, they have TV commercials, they have volunteers, and it all is this buildup to an election day where the sun rises and everybody goes out to the polls and everybody votes. And at 8 p.m., the polls close, the results come out, and the election's over. And that arc of that historic arc doesn't exist in California anymore. And it really doesn't exist as much around the country either. With early vote by mail, we have more opportunities for people to vote. With the policies that we have, we are able to make sure that anybody who's eligible to vote, even on election day, can register and turn in a ballot. There's a lot of great things about our election system that are better than that romantic time in the 70s when that movie The Candidate was made. But it also means that we don't have that kind of same arc that we used to have. Elections have changed a lot. And I think that they've changed for the better in terms of ensuring voters have an opportunity to cast a ballot and participate. But we have lost a little bit of that romantic idea of what campaigns used to be like.
We're going to get in. Please, Mindy, go ahead.
I'll, of course, echo a lot of what Paul said. But I do want to emphasize that variation that some of your reporters have seen just reflects that there are, you know, again, different patterns by neighborhood, by demographics, by the type of needs that voters have. And what we learned, you know, just in the recent study that you mentioned, even though 87% of ballots, right, cast in California in November were vote by mail ballots, people chose the variety of options that were available to them. And still, a good chunk of voters voted in person. They needed to vote in person. They wanted either to be seen or to represent, or they wanted to use language services or accessible vote by mail machines, or a variety of different reasons. And so I always kind of caution, as we talk about so much vote by mail use and the changes that are happening, that we don't leave behind, you know, inadvertently, the people that still want to vote or need to vote in more of a typical kind of traditional way. All of the options are needed to make sure that we have an electorate that is as representative, and we have an election system that is as accessible as possible to everybody. So keeping in mind all of those different types of needs that vary by demographic group.
Finally, and this is for both of you before we let you go, what votes do you think are still up for grabs? And I'm just thinking about the weeks leading up and you know, Latinos are overwhelmingly a significant portion of eligible voters in California, and not only Governor Newsom's campaign, but also candidates running against him. We're really pushing hard to reach these voters. Is that still an outlier in you know, the 10 hours or so we have left until polls close?
Well, it definitely is an outstanding segment of the electorate. So, you know, we talk about this really high turnout so far, but it is also, you know, high turnout for some of the most reliable groups. So, you know, seniors are at about 2/3 turnout, where 18 to 34 year olds are at about, you know, 1/5 of them have turned out. So it's it definitely, those young people could still turn out. Same thing's true with Latinos. There, 26% of them who have ballots have returned them. Among white voters, 45% of them have returned their ballots. So these are the voters that are still out there to get to turn out. I think that there's a smaller share of the electorate that really is persuadable or undecided at this point. I think it's more about getting them to turn out and vote. And, you know, that's going to be both for these younger voters, Latinos and other groups that are traditionally lower turnout, as well as some of these Republican voters who, as we've talked about repeatedly here, you know, have some of those very reliable Republican voters have still yet to vote. They say they're going to vote on Election Day, but they also in the last several days have heard more and more concerns about voter fraud and other things that could act to kind of suppress their vote. So we really need to see if they do end up turning out.
Vicky, would you mind if I want to give a challenge to your listeners? So Paul's absolutely right. It's harder and harder that the voters that are out there, potential voters, right, to kind of shore them up and bring them in and make sure that they vote and participate and are represented. But, you know, everybody here listening, right, those that are voting or planning to still vote, can reach out to family members, to friends, but just make a challenge. We think about the numbers that Paul just mentioned for young people, right? Young people are always, youth are always underrepresented in every election, so far still in this one. Reach out to a young person, ask them if they're voting, encourage them to vote. If they're not registered, if they're eligible, not registered, as already mentioned, you can use same day voter registration at any polling place and vote center in California. They can get registered, support them through that. If you're a young person, you are actually the most powerful tool, because lots of research shows that peer-to-peer contact is the most kind of motivating, right, to help others, other young people participate. Reach out to your friends, your peers, your classmates. And this is another reason why you may or may not care about the election or this recall or the stakes of this recall. But we also know that if a young person votes when they're young, right, that voting is habit forming for them. They're much more likely to continue to vote in future elections. So use this election, right? Another reason to do this work is to encourage them, bring them in as a voter into the election process, and make a potentially a lifelong voter. Isn't that kind of an exciting thing if you think about it? Everybody has the opportunity, the possibility of doing that today.
Mindy and Paul, thanks for joining us this morning, and we'll see you back here tomorrow on Insight as the results pour in and we hopefully get a clearer picture.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks so much.
Mindy Romero is the founder of USC's Center for Inclusive Democracy, and Paul Mitchell is the co-founder of Political Data, Inc. Still ahead, the political junkie himself, Ken Rudin, explains how the gubernatorial recall will shape national politics. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment. Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. All eyes are on California today. The nation will watch to see if Governor Newsom will pay a heavy price for his management of the COVID crisis. In the last several days, the governor has trotted out President Joe Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris to vouch for him. And for months, Newsom has labeled the recall as a Republican recall, laying it squarely at the feet of Trump sympathizers, who he says will turn California into Florida and Texas. Even with a huge Democratic voting base, many will watch to see if Republican candidates can put a dent in Newsom's armor and read the tea leaves to see if this will impact the midterm elections, which is just next year. So to help us digest what the recall looks like from a 300,000-foot national level, we welcome Ken Rudin, longtime political journalist. Ken, thanks for joining us on Insight.
Thank you, Vicki. Good to be back.
Why is the California recall election getting so much national attention?
Well, one, of course, is the biggest state in the country. It's the only game in town. And the fact is that, you know, this should have been or could have been a referendum on Gavin Newsom. And there's a lot to criticize about Gavin Newsom's 3 years in office. But the Democrats and Gavin Newsom have effectively portrayed this as a Republican takeover, an illegal Republican takeover, and led by Larry Elder and others who would push back climate change, who would push back abortion rights. And then they start talking about Texas. They would push back, I mean, so many of the things that Democrats believe in, all the things that about the vaccine, about conspiracy theories. So anyway, in other words, they're trying to use this as a Republican effort to upend what's going on in California and the nation. And you're seeing that in other states with 49 days to go in the election for governor of New Jersey and Virginia. Both Democrats are pushing their opponents, labeling their opponents as Trump acolytes, who will also outlaw abortion, outlaw vaccine mandates and masks and things like that.
Last night in Long Beach, President Biden was talking about the impact of the recall vote on the rest of the country. We're going to play a quick bite, and I just would really appreciate your reaction and expanding on it.
The eyes of the nation are on California, because the decision you're about to make, isn't this going to have a huge impact on California? It's going to reverberate around the nation, and quite frankly, not a joke, around the world.
A joke around the world. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, this is, Gavin Newsom is portraying this election as life and death. And he could be right. And the president could be right. And that's why the Democrats, who were kind of lackadaisical about the recall several months ago until the summer polls showed that it was getting close, But they realize that if, I mean, for example, if something happens to Dianne Feinstein, a Republican governor would appoint a Republican to the Senate and make Mitch McConnell majority leader. If Larry Elder becomes governor, there's no minimum wage, there is no vaccine mandates. All the things that Governor Newsom and President Biden are trying to implement would go away. And that's the same argument you're hearing in New Jersey and Virginia. I live outside of DC. Every 2 seconds is a commercial by Terry McAuliffe, the former governor, saying that his Republican opponent would bring Trumpism back to Virginia, and that's not acceptable.
Yeah, and when it comes to minimum wage, there's still a federal minimum wage. You know, and when listening to the campaigning yesterday, I mean, it sounds like it's not so much on campaigning on Governor Newsom's policies, rather against kind of the ominous alternative. So let's listen to another soundbite where the president also linked a yes vote on the recall to bringing back former President Donald Trump.
This year, the leading Republican running for governor is the closest thing to a Trump clone that I've ever seen in your state. No, I really mean it. And he's leading the other team. He's the clone of Donald Trump. Can you imagine him being governor of this state? You can't let that happen.
All right, Ken, what about the strategy linking a yes vote on the recall to former President Trump?
Well, it's an effective campaign. It's an effective strategy. I mean, again, if we wanted to talk about Gavin Newsom's record, we could talk about all the things that's gone wrong in the 3 years, even though his popularity is, for example, far higher than Gray Davis had in 2003. But the fact is, there are a lot of things to attack Gavin Newsom on. But by pointing the finger at the opposition, at what Republicanism and Trumpism could bring to California, that's proven to be an effective strategy. And it seems to be effective in New Jersey and Virginia as well. And again, that could be a formula for the 2022 midterm elections by the Democrats.
So let's say Governor Newsom beats this recall. What lesson should he take away from this experience?
Well, of course, a lot has to do with the margin of victory. If he squeaks by, then, you know, maybe he should be worried about his reelection in 2022. But again, if he wins big, it'll give a sign to the Democrats that this is the way we, the Democrats, need to perform and in the midterms in 2022. You know, by all historical measures, the Republicans are favored to pick up the House and perhaps the Senate as well in the midterms voting against the incumbent after 2 years. And there's a lot of arguments to be made against the Joe Biden administration, as brief as it's been. So this could give the Democrats a big boost if the recall is defeated by a large margin. But at the same time, if we talk about national strategy, you're hearing Republicans already in California saying that it's a fixed election, that it's filled with vote fraud, which is amplifying on what President Trump has said about his own defeat in 2020. So that may be the Republican strategy as well. Anything that's close, anything that may be turned against them, that's not going their way, they claim fraud. Some Republicans said this is a lazy way of campaigning, but until it stops working, the Republicans are going to keep doing it.
Ken, thanks for spending time with us this morning. And don't go too far. We're going to be having you back on tomorrow.
Thanks. Good to see you. And Vicky, by the way, you were great in that debate a few weeks ago. You were wonderful. Thanks so much for that.
Thank you very much, Ken. And that is Ken Rudin. He is the political junkie himself, and we'll see him back on Insight tomorrow. That is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you to producer Cynthia Lopez and managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital team is Chris Hagen, Emily Zent, Helga Salinas, and Megan Minata. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones, and our engineer is Steven Starbuck. Joe Barr is Cap Radio's chief content officer. And I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you back here bright and early tomorrow with election results.